Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am beyond enthused. I need a new word, something to really explain the degree of stokedness that I have to talk to our guest today, because she's been on the show before and she's awesome and a personal favorite of mine. Welcome to, back to the show, Sex Nerd Sandra. How are you doing?
I'm great. You really pumped me up there. I'm excited as well, and I like you, and thank you for having me, etc.
You're just one of my favorite humans. Sex educators, humans in general, like, because for always and forever, you're just going to be like this tiny but like stable Angelina Jolie. So it just makes me happy when I think about you. It's like, yeah, you're just wonderful. So you are a sex educator. You do a podcast as well. What is the status of your sexuality education career right now? What are you up to?
What am I up to? Well, I just started doing the podcast again. I had stopped for about a month and a half, and I'm loving it. I'm feeling real refreshed. And the status is I haven't been teaching as many workshops lately, and I've been thinking about how to do it in a way that works for me. Because, like, I just went to New York. I had a great, practically sold out show with New York Comic Con at Union Hall, and it was great. I loved seeing everyone, and it was Melina Williams was my guest, and it was just good times. But I get really tired traveling, and that's a lot of sex ed right now in terms of pleasure classes, and not in a college like you are. It's a lot of traveling, and that's not working for me as much as it used to.
So, like, the workshops that you were teaching, what kind of content is involved there?
Oh, you name it. I probably know at least one thing about it. Blowjobs, classic favorite. Anal sex 101, blowjobs 201, I think I call it suck smarter, not harder. Snatch tack, cunnilingus. It's cunnilingus. Yeah, female pleasure. It's a lot of just hands-on. I mean, I'm not putting my hands on people, but it's a lot of just how can we make each other feel good classes. Playful kink, like a one-on-one light kink exploration class. I really love just talking about playfulness in the bedroom in all of its ways and all the neat tools we have with our body to do stuff to other bodies and our own bodies.
So one of the things that comes to mind for me as a sex educator, not as like a person, but as somebody who also teaches workshops, like, I find it really challenging to do those kind of things in a way that, like, is useful to the audiences. So I'd be curious about how you make it useful, because, like, the folks who are really, 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 like, rudimentary level, like, don't get the basics of anatomy, may not have any personal experience or something like that, they're not going to come to workshop. And then the folks who feel really empowered to talk about sexuality, like, they're going to know a lot. And I want to make sure that's still something they'll get stuff out of. How do you navigate that?
I mean, I totally know what you mean. You're just like, oh, God, there's that person in the back that knows everything already. Why are they here? They're just going to be annoying and ask me that question that no one knows the answer to, including myself. Why? And the people who don't know anything do come, I find.
Oh, okay.
Especially the gateway classes. Like oral sex, the blowjob classes are a fantastic class that I like to interweave sex positive and healthy messages throughout, because I know that people who may never come to another class again, may never tune into my show, are going to be there because it's the one class that we have permission to go to, because it's like, oh, blowjobs. Oh, my friend's getting married. Oh, no, it's a birthday, girls' night. You know, and so that's where I do a lot of my fun stuff. I don't know how to answer your question, Demarie.
Well, so like, so who's walking in the door, and like, is there like, I have these cartoon characters in my head as, you know, my own lived experience. There's like the folks who come in who are like, I knew all this. This is going to be nothing. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, there's like just a whole mixture of folks who walk in the door. And the irony of learning anything is that the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
Right. And so those people are buttheads. I find that the people who, because I knew a lot when I started going to sex classes. And for me, I felt good that I knew stuff. Like, oh, okay. I've double checked and I'm covering all the things. Okay. So it doesn't have to be that they have to take something away. Just knowing that they figured it out on their own and did pretty well. It's like they're going to walk out of there feeling pretty good. And they're going to be ambassadors for you. So I'm totally okay with those people coming now. And I also don't take on workshops that are outside my comfort zone around what I know. I used to, because it was the thing that you just learn how to teach different classes. And it wasn't until later where I was like, oh, wait, I don't really know a lot about G-spotting. Maybe I shouldn't teach that class. Like, I mean, I know stuff about G-spotting, but I don't really have embodied experience really geeking out on it. So if I'm the kind of person who likes to teach as a way of nerding out about different subjects, and I don't geek out about G-spots, I'm not going to do that one anymore.
It's interesting you bring up G-spot specifically, because like every time I post something G-spot related, I end up getting like pushback about the existence. And like I end up trying to hedge it with the intro to the post being like, you know, like not everybody experiences this and that's okay. And there's not a hierarchy of pleasure. You just, you know, we like, you know, it's just there's lots of information about the vehicle. Here's more information possibly applicable to you. Like, how do you like? Do you find stuff like that? Like, are people coming in there and like ideologically arguing with you or anything like that?
For sure. Oh my goodness, squirting is pee. There's an article that came out last week. Totally, they proved it. It's pee. Oh no, run for the hills. And then there's people who are like, you know, the G-spot is just the back end of the clit, so get over it or something. And it's like, for me, I mean, I get like, I have to choose my battles, and because I'm not an academic, and I have some science research literacy when I look at studies. I definitely do. But it's at the end of the day, buddy, if it feels good inside your vag toward the belly button 3 inches in, that's great. And let's figure out how to play with that. I don't care if it's your clit or your elbow or a myth or like a secret robot embedded in your vagina. I don't care what it is. Like, it feels good. So let's go from there. So that's kind of my attitude about it, and so that's how I give myself permission, is because I think research and science and unbiased research is so important, and it's gonna be, I feel like it's still gonna be a while when it comes to women's bodies, and I'm sure you know a lot more about it than I do, but for me, since I'm focused on pleasure, I don't need a bunch of people in lab coats to prove to me that my clit exists. It's there whether or not they feel like putting it in a book.
Valid.
So that's my attitude.
You mentioned a little bit about, you know, you took like a hiatus from recording and you had been sort of slowing down on stuff and trying to figure out how to make this work for you. Can you talk about like, is it a burnout? Like what is the experience for you right now?
My goodness, so many questions. I mean, of course, it's a podcast, but I just like, oh, it's weird to usually interview people and then have to talk about yourself. Like, oh, crap.
Now you know how it feels.
I'm still jealous about your Sibian, FYI. I really need to ask them for one.
Real talk, okay. It's like, it's that thing is 35 pounds. And I have a tiny, tiny little studio. And so for me to exist as a person, like, everything has to be put away. So realistically, for that to come out requires, like, you know, I need to put that on the Google Calendar. I need to clear my schedule because it's going to be a process to get it out of the closet and out of the box and set it up. And it's like, you know, if I had some giant house in, like, you know, Arizona or something where everything is super big, like, I would just keep it out. I would just have, like, a room. I would just have a room that's just for apparatus, and it'd be good to go. But realistically, it's just chilling most of the time.
Yeah. So you should mail it to me. I'll pay for shipping. But you know, for me, because of the amount of kind of awkwardness I have, I mean, well, many people do, it's not special, but, at sexy parties, but the joy I have at being in those spaces, having things like a violet wand or a Sibian that I can bring, and I am that person who brings the weird toy, because that way no one's looking at me and they're looking at the toy. Like, look at that. Cool, huh? So it's a little bit of that too. Yeah.
All right. So I'm gonna go back to my question though.
Oh, wait, like, wait. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Right. Why did I stop? Was it burnout? I've had sex ed friends who have been telling me for years now, Sandra, you need to take a vacation. You need to, take a break from podcasting. Like, it's been clear to the people who I'm close to that I've been burned out for a while. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's renewal. Like, I am a phoenix. I raise from the ashes. But I also was struggling, and at times I knew it and at times I didn't notice it, but I'm very much struggling with depression on and off. And it can get pretty extreme. And I'm actually really thankful now with healthcare and Obamacare and stuff that I was able to get, like drugs for it and stuff. So that really helps. And I'm feeling great, especially after Burning Man.
Yeah,
that was a good time. Yeah, like, that just, like, kicked me back into high gear. I was like, woo, life is awesome. And that was months ago, so...
I've never actually been. I've only seen pictures, and I feel like I'm too high maintenance, so I've never gone.
I mean, I am very not high maintenance when it comes to stuff like dirt and tents, so I don't know what to tell you.
Well, just what was it like? Yeah. What did you do all day?
It's really hot, so a lot of the time you're sitting around camp in the kitchen in the shade with people and just being hungover and talking and having a good chill time. And then when the sun goes down, you put on a lot of fur and you drink some alcohol and then you go dance. That is what some people do. I tend to more go see my friends at different camps and explore. I love the fact that it's like an unpredictable Disneyland, that I might come upon an amazing giant musical instrument in the middle of the desert, or I might find fire dancing, or there might be a burlesque show, or there might be a midnight grilled cheese. Like, you never know what you're gonna find. I found Susan Sarandon, you know. It was just what? Like, okay. It was really fun.
I'm torn between being more excited about Susan Sarandon and grilled cheese, because you know, grilled cheese has a real place in my heart. And there was also a revelation that I had, and I think it's because somebody pointed it out to me. I don't think I came to this on my own. But the grilled cheese in tomato soup is basically like pizza in disguise. And I was like, that's...
Oh, I never thought about that. That's really funny.
It is. It's like top secret pizza. Like, when you can't
it's
have
a
pizza.
Deconstructed... alternative dimension pizza.
Yeah. Although realistically, at the end of the day, like, my love, my primary partner is mac and cheese. Like, you know, everything else is really just like, you know, we have strong connections too, but mac and cheese is really my home and always has been.
Got it.
And always will be. Yes.
God, I respect your relationship status.
Yeah. I would sell someone's puppy, you know, like, it's serious. We're really serious.
Calm down. I have a dog. We need to wait. Calm down.
Oh, I've seen pictures of your dog. Does your dog do stupid shit? Like, is it
like eat the crotch out of all my panties? Yes.
Yeah. What is that? What is that? Why is that a thing?
there's just something about that primal smell that they just go nuts for and need to ingest. I don't know, but I just lost my favorite pair of pants to it.
Man.
Yeah, I don't need all my clothes to be crotchless, Tim Murray.
You know, I don't need any of them to be crotchless. I've never really understood crotchless panties. It's like it's not that hard to just push them to the side. I don't understand.
I think, yeah, it's someone's got to – I don't understand it either. I think it's good, actually, in terms of STI transmission to wear crotchless panties. I've realized that that can be a way to help reduce skin-to-skin contact at least a little bit.
Ooh, that's a good point. That is such a good point. Why aren't they teaching that in high schools?
I think that you can't – I mean, you'd have to study like cotton and cotton poly and nylon blends and see – yeah, we don't have any data on that.
No, because, I mean, it's just as likely that actually it would hold in things. I don't really know. I'm sure it, I'm sure it depends on the fibers. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah, you see, now I may be an undereducated sex educator, but I can acknowledge when I don't know shit.
Well, and it's like most of this stuff, though, is just – is – understudied in general. And Justin Lehmiller, Dr. Justin Lehmiller, did a really interesting article the other day about, it was called, it was something like, we needed a study to find that. And it was basically just like, because so much of sexuality is like common sense, which basically means like, we just have said this for a long time, you know, so therefore everyone knows. And like, he just wrote about how completely lacking in actual data we are for most things around sexuality. And so, yeah, we have to do studies to like prove that, you know, boys have penises, like whatever, you know, stuff like that. Like just really, really basic things around sexuality, because we've only really started studying it, you know, in there are people who are alive now who sexology had never really been like empirically validated in their lifetime, you know?
It's amazing. It's amazing. One of my favorite, like, facts that a recent guest told me is that they finally did a couple studies around kinky people and intelligence. And sure enough, kinky people tend to be, you know, higher, like, just measurable intelligence. And not to say that if you're vanilla, you're stupid. I'm just, it was just entertaining because you just, you notice at a dungeon, like, wow, there's a lot of nerdy engineers here. You know, it's just, what's that about?
You know, I always thought that it was like a creativity thing, that like just your brain needs more stimuli to get to the same place perhaps, and needing more varied stimuli perhaps.
Well, you know, someone really smart said that creativity is intelligence having fun.
Ooh.
What?
Oh, who said that?
I don't know, probably like Einstein or something. Ooh. It's on my Pinterest board. Who knows?
Yeah. I like that a lot. Wow.
Good.
Wow, yeah, that's just going to sit there for a while. And be like, ooh.
Ah. Ooh. I feel like we're going all over the place. Like, have I answered your question?
Oh, yeah, we're doing great. We're doing
great. Okay, good. Good.
So we before we started recording, we were just talking about like what are the stuff that we're interested in lately, and one of the things that we both have a great deal of interest in talking about as sex educators is body image stuff. And I personally have I have personal interest as well as like academic interest as well. So what's that like for you?
My body image stuff is not something that I really talk about in classes beyond, hey, you're hot. If they want to be with you, they think you're hot. So, you know, just swallow that one, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever I say. But I recently gained about 10, 15 pounds and over the last year. And so I'm the heaviest I've ever been. And I'm also the sexiest I've ever felt. And that's interesting to me. And a part of it is a lot of personal growth, and part of it's confidence, and a lot of it's having to do with happiness and where I'm at in life. But also, I'm feeling really in my body, and the way I'm using my body and the way I move. I don't know, there's just something, I'm feeling really sexy. And I think just on the surface, yeah, my body is sexy to me right now. So it's not just, oh, confidence makes up for so much fat. It's not that. It's not that. It's like, I'm feeling good. And it's cracking me up because I look at pictures of how of what I looked like maybe 2 years ago, and been like, oh, I was like way skinnier than now, and I thought I was fat and just like tolerably attractive. So, which means that at that time I had no real, I did not have an accurate sense of what I looked like. Like, I was seeing myself through beer goggles at that time. And that's interesting because I think of myself as a fairly realistic, logical, present human person. And here I am realizing that I am now at the size that I thought I was then. That's weird. It's like I don't understand it.
Yeah, that is interesting.
That's what's on my mind.
So, from just speaking from my own experience, I have like a very particular aesthetic for myself in which I feel comfortable. And So when I deviate from that, which most likely is going to happen, I'm going to gain weight just because like the nature of my life is that I get too busy or something like that. And I don't get to take care of myself and like cortisol and all those sort of things. And so when I'm stressed, I'll gain weight. And so there's this, not only am I unhappy because I'm stressed, but also like I'm just outside of the realm that makes me happy. Too thin, I don't feel comfortable either. Like there's that space as well. But like it's interesting for me to try to talk to people about it because I'm like, no, it's not that I have a problem with, you know, like curves on a female body. Like that's not what's freaking me out. It's just that there's this space for me. There's a narrow window in which I feel comfortable. And I don't know if that's like something I should be working on, if that's like an area that is dysfunctional, or if I've actually just found like what is my healthy weight window and like I actually have an emotional response to being outside of that. I don't know.
What's the emotional response when you gain weight? Are you like, oh, wah.
Put down the
chips, or are you like, oh, I'm the worst ever?
No, it's not like, oh, I'm a worthless being and no one can possibly love me now that I have like this flesh that I didn't have before. It's not like that. It's more like a dysmorphia. Like just, this isn't me. This isn't supposed to be here. And in the same way, if I get too thin, I'm just like, well, this isn't cute, you know? So it's like, it's shifted over my life. Like when I was a teenager, what was normal to me was super different. But yeah, there's always, I think there's definitely like, like a weight at which bodies want to be. And they try to get back to that. And so there's, and everybody's is different. I think there's, you know, like for my numeric, like weight, like on the scale is like way higher than like a BMI chart says it should be. So it's not even that. It's my comfortable weight is, I'm also like kind of muscly. So that, you know, BMI charts are useless for me because.
Right. Yeah. Those charts kind of fuck with everybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely, you're like fitness boss.
You know? Yeah.
Like my biceps quiver near your biceps.
Oh, they don't have to. They give me friends.
They can be friends.
They can be friendly biceps. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Aww.
Dysmorphia. I've never really used that word until recently to describe my experience. But it's like, oh yeah, that's dysmorphic. What I experienced there.
Yeah, I mean that's. I think yeah, and I'm curious. There's sort of a lot in the literature around eating disorders, especially around like anorexia, where the experience is described as being dysmorphic, that like people who are suffering from like anorexia nervosa see themselves as larger than they are. And I've always been curious if that's really the accurate description or if that's how someone on the outside is describing the experience. Because, and this is actually never something I've never talked on the show about before. But as a very young person, I suffered from anorexia, and I never was. I don't think it was ever inaccurate about what I looked like. I think I had a very realistic grasp of what I looked like. I think I had a very specific standard of what I wanted. I think it was actively trying to be ridiculously thin. I was completely aware of what I was doing, and I think that I doubt I'm the only one. I'm guessing that there's a degree of like people who go into the field who've never actually experienced it, you know, just like take away the agency from people. Yeah. So, and any disease that like young women get, I feel like you're really, really likely to take away agency from them. So I've always wondered about that to see if I can't possibly be the only one that's had that experience.
No, I don't think, not at all. I wonder, it makes me curious if you, once you hit a certain weight, you stopped being anorexic, or if it, because my very small understanding of anorexia is that you just keep wanting to get tinier and tinier.
Yeah, I think it's ultimately like a coping strategy, and an ultimately unsustainable coping strategy to deal with like anxiety. And there are evolutionary psychology theories that it's an exaggerated mating strategy. In fact, that in a culture where, so for instance, okay, so to back it up, like so many of our evolutionary adaptations we perceive as having been incredibly useful like 6,000 years ago, right? So the reasons that we do things now are because it was helpful to somebody, you know, in a cave. But there are adaptations that are helpful in the modern era and that will come out as well. And so there was an article I read that was theorizing that anorexia and bulimia and various other disordered eating behaviors are in a culture where you have an evolutionary advantage to being able to control your body size.
Mm-hmm.
Being someone who has really almost an uncontrollable compulsion to have a particular body size, you have a mating advantage. And I was like, whoa.
Oh my goodness, that makes so much sense. Like, yeah, of course, within this society, I'm winning. By being super skinny. So like that would be considered healthy from that perspective.
So it's like, you know, like evolution didn't stop. It's not like, you know, we got here and now we're just going to stay like this. It's like an ongoing process, right? And evolution only works because the mutants get laid. So like mutants got laid in the last couple hundred years, right? So like the mutants who have the propensity for eating disorders are going to pass it along because it was advantageous to them, because like thinness is incredibly popular in specific cultures, in ones where food is not a scarce resource. Like fatness is much more attractive in cultures where food is rare because it's a sign of wealth.
That is fascinating. The idea that we're breeding into our genes more people who have a lean toward eating disorders.
Well, yeah. Think about who gets laid, right? Like, I mean, everybody.
It's not me.
Everybody can get laid. I mean, like, everybody can get laid. But, you know, this is a departure from that. But I had a conversation with a friend who's autistic about how probably there were a lot more autistic people back in the day, because it's not advantageous as a mating strategy now to be autistic, because they do poorly in social situations unless socialized and trained around it. So there are going to be fewer and fewer and fewer. And they were actually talking about the importance of neurodiversity in our species, because autistics are probably responsible for the huge leaps forward in technology that we've had throughout history. And if we breed them all out, or we treat it like it needs to be cured, we're going to just like not be able to make those crazy leaps forward anymore.
I tend to be attracted and date really nerdy people who like sometimes it's like it's like we take turns figuring out that the other person's probably on the spectrum. So I feel like the nerd revolution of just being a celebration of intelligence. I mean, there's still people who aren't very good at socializing, and I just find that there are a lot of people who have a tinge of possibly being autistic, possibly not diagnosed, but I feel like that they're coming back. That's what I'm saying, maybe.
I hope so. And I also just hope that like, and this was the thing I didn't know about at all, that like the prevailing autism group, Autism Speaks, refers to it basically as something that needs to be stamped out. And it's like, yeah, it's like family members of people who are autistic, not actual autistics, who run the organization. And so a lot of autistic folks find them to be basically the Nazi party of autism, because they're trying to stamp out a group that they claim to represent. So That was a thing I had no idea about. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, interesting. I find that the concept of neurodiversity is so important to like leave room for different working brains and behaviors. I love that, though, that it's kind of like the deaf community. Mm. I don't know if they're calling themselves the deaf community or what it's called. Yeah. But, you know, that's a community, and it's just a different way of talking with your hands. And so people who like would want to stamp out like definite, like you'd be killing a culture if you were trying to stamp that out. So anyway, it just reminds me of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely read about folks who like object to cochlear implants and stuff like that in kids, and you know, those sort of things, and that's really challenging for me as a person who has no lived experience with that to really come down on the side of like having an opinion. I have no idea.
Neither do I. But I will say this: if you're listening and you're a total weirdo, procreate.
Yeah.
That's bringing it back to sex.
That's the message of the day. Yeah, weirdos. Weirdos should be doing more of the breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you really like Sudoku and role playing, get it. Get
Is that weird?
I don't know. I'm just.
I'm like, your standard of weird is making me feel like I'm like an alien right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you like Little Settlers of Catan, huh? Yeah. Yeah, oh, you like that?
God. Oh, my God. Because that game is really ultimately about where you set up your stuff in the very beginning. Because ultimately, like, you don't have that grain in that stuff in the very beginning. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Nothing. Nothing.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. You're just going to get drunk while your friends do stuff. And then eventually, when you get some power, you try to, like, cause a war, and you're like, no, I'm not going to trade with you, even though I totally could. And we're going to have this animosity in real life as a result.
Have you ever played the game Munchkin?
No, what is that?
It's making fun of D&D, but in a loving way, but it's a game that is designed for you to argue, because all the cards that you get give you different skills. Like, oh, you have four axes, so you beat anybody with two axes, but then there's... It's intentionally vague, and so there's all these ways that if someone's not on their game, you could be like, oh, so I win that thing, but if they look, they're like, wait, no, I could win that thing. I'm like, no, basically, it's an arguing game. It's fun.
I want to go to there. That sounds great.
Yeah, Munchkin. Get it.
I'm writing this down. Writing this down. Munchkin. And we will have, like, sexy party night. We'll play... Munchkin, the big red.
Yeah, all those Widener's over there in Philadelphia. Do you have secret sexy parties?
I mean, I don't know what the students are doing now. It would be probably weird if I partied with my students, because at this point, you know, like, you know, when I'm in the position to be like grading them, I want to maintain like a degree of distance. After we have passed that point, then we can totally be friends. But prior to that, I want to be sort of tabula rasa, and you know.
I'm not talking about your current students. I'm talking about all like your cohort or people.
Oh, the back in the day.
I just feel like a lot of
people
stuck around.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, back in the day we had some crazy stuff. I mean, like, I think you don't go, I mean, you go to sex school because you're into that. And like, when you first show up at sex school, it's just like being shot out of a cannon. And most of the folks who go there are coming from places where like they were the one, they were the only one in their community who liked talking about this stuff. And like, they felt so strange and alien and alone for so long. And now they're just like, and they're just so full of all this anxious energy that they're just like, still ready for sex school. And then they find other people that are the same, and they just sort of like explode into a big ball of confetti and dildos. And then the parties are great, you know? And like the ASEC conferences, the American Association of Sexologists, Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, I didn't understand what the word networking meant. I just went there for partying. And it's like, you know, we end up with like, you know, like dance parties and naked pool time. And like, apparently that's networking in our field. I was unaware.
So no one invited me that stuff when I was going to ASEC stuff.
What do you mean nobody invited you? You just, I mean,
I went to ASECT and then I went to bed. Oh. Like, I just would go to the conference and I'd meet people at the like buffet or whatever. But I didn't know there was partying.
We must not have been there at the same time, because it's like, you know, half Timory will party. Like, that's how it goes.
Oh, that's right, because we were at a conference recently for a moment together. Yeah. Oh, I was only there for one day. The She Conference?
It was...
in Arizona?
Woodhull. We were in D.C.
Was that Woodhull?
It was Woodhull.
Oh, my God. It's too many
yeah.
Oh, generic-looking conferences.
That was a ton of... Yeah, that night I went out with a bunch of sex ed kids, and we, like, tore it up, because there was, like, the nation's oldest lesbian bar, and I was like, we have to go there. And it was,
and I was
like,
exhausted and couldn't.
And it was like fine. It was like terrible as far as bars go, but like I was excited that I got to be, you know, a part of history. And then we went to a better bar. It was great.
Aw, that's nice.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I recall that being good. Yeah.
Hey, you're a teacher of sex stuff. What are you finding is on a trend right now with your students? Like, are there particular research topics everyone's obsessed with?
I get them when they're intro level. So I don't know. I can't speak to them broadly, but when I get them at intro level, they are very, very excited to talk about gender. They're very, very excited to talk about socialization around, all the different identities. So the variety of genders aside from male, female, talking about gender expression on the spectrum of masculinity, femininity, and definitely talking about different sexual orientations outside of homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual, pansexual, like the huge alphabet of possibilities, including demisexuality, asexuality, and then being romantically attracted differently than sexually attracted, and how those things may or may not line up. And that's definitely an area where people are like being like, whoa, we haven't even really explored the diversity of lived experience around this stuff. We just all assumed we were all the same. And then all these folks were like, I just always thought I was broken, but no, I'm not. There's other people like me.
Ha, that's funny. Well, good. I just came out as agender and demisexual. So yeah. I guess it's good that I've got a whole army of people coming.
How was that process for you? Like, how did you come to come up that way?
Gosh, I have for many years had a struggle with my gender expression. And I remember a coworker many years ago pointing out, as I was in like camos and boots and some button-down shirt, like, you know, yesterday you were wearing a really frilly dress and now you're just like this, like, what's going on? Like, I just would kind of waver all over the place. And so I'd say I was fluid, or it's like every day was a statement about what my gender was. And so the term fluid wasn't working for me. Like, it just didn't make sense. Like, why is it that I'm feeling feminine one day and masculine the next? And I found an article online, and I don't know, it's bookmarked somewhere, about getting past the level of where you're judging things for being masculine or feminine, and just deep down to a level of how do you identify, just not with no clues about, oh, I'm wearing pants that are kind of masculine, so I'm a dude, but just what do you feel like? And there's just nothing there for me.
Huh.
I don't feel like anything. But there are lots of archetypes that I lean into. I can get very feminine and like very like goddessy. I can get very little girl. I can be very Joan Jett, but I can also be very newsy boy. I don't know. There's just a lot of different, archetypes that I fluctuate in between. But I tend to present more feminine. Yeah, and I just all the pronouns. Like, I don't care. You can call me whatever you want. Like, it doesn't matter, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I think it can be confusing in sex, because I also want to be aware of how the person I'm with wants to be related to. Because with some people, I can tap into my more masculine side. For other people, they're like, not attractive, not attractive, you know? Mm-hmm. Emergency. So, yeah, that's a thing.
That's, I love hearing about this stuff because, like, my experience is like femifem. I mean, like, and it's, I guess it might be surprising because I'm like kind of like a muscular chick. I get misgendered as being a drag queen or a trans woman, like fairly often, which like isn't insulting or anything, but it's just confusing because I'm like, you have a very limited perception of what women look like. but whatever. And I've done drag a couple times. In fact, I did it last night. And every time I've ever done it, I do this really like soft butch dude, like Justin Bieber. Like I'm a young guy, like, and not like a super, I don't know. And it made me feel not icky, like I wouldn't say icky, but I was like not sexy. Like I was just like I don't want anybody to make out with me while I have this 5 o'clock shadow because that would make me feel weird. But you know, like it was fun to do as a performance. Yeah, like
interesting.
Yeah, I'm just like femme. Like I will pick up a tractor and I will throw it across the room because like I'm Diesel, but I'll do it in a dress and heels.
Here's a question.
All right.
Do you feel powerful in a dress and heels?
I feel most powerful dressed kind of like the female characters in action movies, which is like a cat suit and heels and like my hair curled and lots of makeup on. That's when I feel like I could do anything.
You're one of Charlie's Angels.
I am, in fact. I am. Yeah.
I mean, I know that not anybody who doesn't like heels is not a gender. Like it's for me, I mean, I do love more of the badass superhero style outfitting. I'm really into tunics right now and yeah. Belts, but I guess it's more like a Lord of the Rings character that I'm really into. But for me, I feel like my kind of like my hair's been cut if I'm Samson or like you've taken a dog and put like booties on their paws. Like I'm just like, no, what's happening? Like if I wear heels or if I have nail polish on, it's like I can't use my hands. It's like, get it off.
Wow. That's so interesting to hear about. Okay.
Yeah, I can rock some femme. I can definitely rock it. But it's like I need to like recharge with 3 days of cargos for, you know.
Wow. This is so interesting to me. I do have to bring us sort of to a close because we are running out of minutes. But everybody needs to know all about you, where to find your stuff, how to contact you, all those things. Where can they find out more about you?
Oh, goodness. I am Sex Nerd Sandra, Sandra. Yes, I said sex nerd. I'm everywhere as that person, and my podcast is with Nerdist and on iTunes, probably all the other podcast places. And yeah, if you want me to come talk and teach and speak at colleges or wherever near you, contact people near you that have the monies to bring people like me there.
Yeah.
But other than that, really, it's I'm on the Young Turks News Network sometimes, and I think at some point I'll be doing online workshops for small groups so it can be interactive. So that's a thing I'm excited about, hopefully in the future.
That's awesome. So I want to super duper thank you for coming back on. You are always an absolute delight. Thank you for finding time for us.
So, thank you. Thanks for asking. It's lovely to check in and see how you're doing.
Yeah. So thank you to Sex Nerd Sandra for coming on today. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great day. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Emery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Emery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithemery. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.